Good afternoon and welcome to Life Moments, a podcast designed to inform, to inspire, and to motivate. I'm Terry Beckstrom, your host. We're coming to you from Sumter, South Carolina. I've got a special guest with me today. Mr. John Kay is with us. John Kay used to play baseball for my uncle at Coastal Carolina when I was introduced to him. He's one of those people that I met and immediately liked. John was dating my cousin at the time, and I remember him talking to me at his apartment discussing fitness. And we talked about push-ups. He said, I'd rather do 15 push-ups that are good than 50 in bad form. Good advice. John did ask me whether or not he should marry my cousin. I told him yes, and the rest is history. So John and Jeannie, his wife, have two amazing girls, Allison, who is a graduate of Clemson engineering program. She now works for ExxonMobil in Baton Rouge. And Kristen, who is an IT guru at Manhattan Associates in Atlanta. They're two brilliant girls, and they were raised by two brilliant folks. And so tonight I wanted to bring John in and talk to him about his secret sauce to see what we can find out about raising kids. So John, thank you for joining us today. So I have a set of questions that I want to ask you because I think people need to know what's going on and how they too can raise girls or boys that are as successful as yours. And I'm not talking about just success in school and in business, but I'm talking about success in life. And you and I have had a lot of discussions about raising kids, and I've gotten advice from you. And one thing I can say about John is John is a man of few words, but when he says something, it's usually profound wisdom. So I've got a few questions I want to ask you tonight. And John, the first I'm going to ask you is tell us about yourself, and don't be modest. We had a lengthy conversation one day when I was traveling back to Raleigh about raising kids. But before we get into that, I want you to tell me a little about yourself, if you will.
Sure. Mom and dad, three sisters, raised in Northern Illinois and the Washington, D.C. area. Enjoyed playing sports. Family was heavily involved in church all the time. And so just a solid home, far from perfect, but a place where we tried to be honest with each other about when we did things well and when we didn't, and we're willing to say I'm sorry. And I think all in all, I was rather well prepared to leave home, go to college, and stand on my own two feet. And a lot of those principles are the kinds of things that parents instilled in their children going back hundreds of years. We changed things up a little bit here in the last 40 or 50 years, and it's different now. And I'm not sure that's always a good thing.
So here's the next question, John. What are you seeing today with the kids as far as career goals, career preparation, job outlook, and overall attitude with the kids today? I know you've got some interesting perspectives on that, but you just talked a minute ago about the changes you've seen. Tell us a little about what you think is going on right now in the mindset of the kids today, and we can delve more into that after you give us that advice.
Yeah, well, for 600 years in Western civilization, kids were basically raised the same way. And, I'm kind of a big John Roseman fan, so I've read a lot of his stuff. And if you say what I'm saying sounds like something you've heard before, you probably read it in one of his books. So I think that it all starts at home at the very beginning, where mom and dad are in charge. And kids are kids, and parents are parents, and there's no question about if anyone's going to be frustrated in this house, it's not going to be the mom and dad. And that's a very normal part of the process. I think another thing is, we in this day and age as parents tend to inject ourselves into the lives of our children and then wonder why they don't aspire to be around adults or people like us. And it's due to the fact that we've created a situation where there's nothing to actually aspire to. Back in the day, you could stand near the adults, but you were to be seen and not heard. So they didn't mind you being around, but you could be around to listen to them, learn what they had to say, and not interrupt, and understand that you had a place, and that sometime down the road, maybe one day you too could join, the adults at the adult table and participate in conversations and laugh at their jokes and all that kind of stuff. But that's really rare when there's a family gathering for there to be adults in one area and kids, over in another room or outside playing, and there to be little to no interaction between the two. And I think that what resulted from the way that it has been for hundreds of years was actually a very healthy thing, which I would love to see us get back to.
Okay, so picking up from what you just talked about, you were discussing how parents perhaps had changed and where the attitudes have changed. And I certainly agree with you. And one of the things that, you know, I look at as an adult now and having a child who's 21 is we kind of started early. We started at, you know, at 12 years old, I started my first job on a paper route. And I certainly can understand and agree with what you said about kids having less of a role, at least in discussing what's going on, and maybe we had more time to listen and to listen to the wisdom that was given to us. And I think that, you know, things have definitely changed. Let's talk just for a minute, though, pick up on what you just said about parents. What are parents doing wrong? And that's probably not a good term to use, but you get the gist of what I'm saying. What are we as parents doing wrong today that is resulting in what we're seeing? Because I have to say that we have to take some of the blame.
Well, I kind of don't accept the language that we use today. We call it parenting. For a very long time, it was called child rearing, where the responsibility was on the child to grow up and become a productive citizen. All of the adults kind of worked together, the mom and the dad, the grandparents, the teacher, the coach, all kind of pulling in the same directions to try to bump and nudge this young skull full of mush in the right direction so that he would learn the lessons he needed to learn and become a productive citizen. But the responsibility in child rearing was on the child. Even when you just say the word, you know, child rearing, it's clear where the responsibility lies. But now we call it parenting, where the pressure is on the parent to not make any mistakes. And if anything goes wrong, well, it's because you made some mistakes and you should feel guilty for making all those mistakes. Well, I think that's completely upside down and backwards. And so if we could recognize the fact that we're humans, we make lots of mistakes. So it's not about not making mistakes. It's about placing the responsibility in the laps of the people who should own their responsibility to grow up and accept personal responsibility and learn to be a productive member of their family, their classroom, their team, their community, their church, and not just wait for mommy and daddy to come give you everything.
So I think we're discussing helicopter parents, right? Where parents are taking too big of a role in the kids' lives and they're trying to, you know, I guess push them in all the right directions. And I think a lot of times, if I'm hearing what you're saying, kids aren't allowed the opportunity to make the mistakes that we made growing up. So they kind of go into their life believing that everything is, you know, supposed to always end up their way. And I think we've done a disservice to the kids, but it sounds like you are, in fact, placing a lot of the blame on the parents, rightly so. Am I hearing that right?
Well, no, that's kind of not the message I want to get across. What I would encourage the parents to do is to completely let go of this big, massive weight of guilt that they're all carrying around trying to not make a mistake, and recognize the fact that not making a mistake is not the goal, right? The goal is to try to create an environment in which this little kid can learn some lessons so that he has a shot at being successful down the road. Well, what does that look like? Well, on the baseball field, what that means is the coach creates scenarios where the player is going to have a hard time. They're going to struggle. They're going to fail. And it's from those failures that you actually become resourceful and learn how to develop skills so that when you're in the game, you actually have a shot at being successful. In the house, we had a couple, you know, situations where there were some words that you weren't allowed to say at our house. One of them was, "I'm bored." Right, if one of our girls decided that they wanted to announce that they were, you know, so bored, don't have anything to do, I made sure that I found something for them to do, like get a rag and wipe down all of the kitchen cabinets, go around and scrub any spot off the floor, and I would have them do that until they promised that they would never be bored again. So it doesn't always have to be something that they enjoy. Moms and dads, when they're trying to raise kids, want to create an environment where their kids are going to learn lessons, which will benefit them for the rest of their life. And it seems like many times today, we only want our little kids just to be happy and smile all the time and never struggle. And I think that's just a massive missed opportunity.
So, okay, getting back to that. So here's what I want to talk to you about for a second. I'm going to break away here. We're talking about entitlement to some extent. You were an athlete. You played sports. You coached sports. Both of your girls were into sports. What do you think today about all that's going on with this entitlement attitude in sports that has really kind of changed the game to where, you know, the term that comes to me most quickly is the participation trophy, where everybody gets a trophy. You don't want to have people that are standouts because some people might get offended. Talk to us about that in the sporting arena and how that has trickled down to the little league teams and what the overall effects are, maybe, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I think the athletic arena is just sort of a mirror or a reflection of these other things we've been talking about. Just some common sense examples. Back in Zion, Illinois, where I grew up, you could start playing Little League Baseball when you were in the fourth grade. And the members on the team were from the fourth grade to the eighth grade, right? So that's a pretty wide span. So if you were a fourth grader and you weren't very good, you weren't going to play. And that's just how it was. If you were a third grader and you weren't old enough to play, you didn't play. And so I would go stand behind the fence and watch these kids play and just couldn't wait to get out there. And after their game, I would go like slide around the bases and to get my pants all dirty and go home and tell mom, you know, I was amazing. I probably scored like 9 runs, or, you know, and just because I wanted to play so badly. But what it created was this environment where if you were young and wanted to play, you had to learn to be really good and earn your spot. We all start out in right field, you know, and then when you get to where you're a little bigger, you might make it over to center or maybe into second base or third or whatever. And then when you went up to the plate, I remember we had played Sandlot for days and I didn't have any trouble hitting the ball. But when there's an eighth grader out there trying to throw it really hard by you, it's a little different when you're in the fourth grade.
I can remember playing the games we played, like, you know, freeze tag, whatever games there were, and you had to pick teams. I don't remember when I was one of the last ones, or even at times the last ones to get picked, where I went home and sat in a corner in a fetal position and started crying and saying they didn't pick me and all. You just, you know, pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and you made it. It didn't affect me for the rest of my life. I was able to carry on. But that whole mentality is just, it's changed so dramatically in the United States today. I don't know if other countries are the same.
Well, it is, but it, you know, it's, I think it crosses all borders. But today, you know, if you're a little kid and you want to play baseball, and I don't know how old you are in the fourth grade, let's just say it's like 9 or 10, right? You start when you're like 6 and you go out on the field with a bunch of 6-year-olds and you're all 6-year-olds and you're all wearing a uniform. You probably have batting gloves and a bag and a couple bats, you know, and then there's at least a mom and a dad out there and they're all yelling at the coach because the kid's not playing in the right spot. And so this whole environment has been created that really doesn't have the kids in mind.
Well, let's bring the scalpel out for a moment and talk about a couple of the challenges that we're facing. Let's talk about parents alone right now. What are some of the challenges facing parents as to raising children today in today's environment with all that's going on? Talk about some of the challenges that parents are facing and then perhaps maybe some of the solutions.
Yeah, you know, it is different now. I think it'd be tad naive to say that you know, it's completely the same today as it was 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago, but I think that, you know, when it gets right down to working with kids, they're just human beings, and there are fundamental building blocks that if a mom and dad are willing to focus on, you know, personal responsibility, teach them so that when they walk into a room, they can look around and see if something needs to be done, and they'll do it without being asked, right? It requires learning to be unselfish. When I was a little fella, we kind of liked some ice cream at the end of the day. So if we were watching something on television and I wanted some ice cream, I'd jump up and run upstairs and get a little bowl of ice cream. My dad would look at me and say, "Why don't you go ask your sisters if they want some?" I'm like, "Dang it." Okay. So I went downstairs and I said, "Hey, you guys want some ice cream?" And they're like, "Yeah, we want some ice cream." I said, "Well, go up and get it out of the freezer. It's in the freezer, you know?" And so my dad looks at me and goes, "That's not what I'm talking about. You need to, you know, ask them what they want." And so he taught me how to serve. He taught me how to find out what the others wanted. Don't just make everything about you and yourself, right? and look out for those around you. So as a mom and a dad, if you can raise your kid so that they come out of your house with an understanding of work ethic, right? This is what's do the job, do it right the first time. Put yourself in a situation where you don't need to be told what to do. You can come in and understand what needs to be done, and you just start doing it.
Doesn't sound that hard, really. So, great advice. Let's turn the corner. How about kids? What can kids do today? Because I have a feeling there's some kids are going to listen to this today because their parents are probably going to make them. You know, what are the challenges facing kids today, and what can they do to, for lack of a better term, improve themselves so that they can have a better shot of being successful, and not just monetarily or job-wise, but being successful as a human being? Give us some advice there for the kids.
Well, I was probably beaten up by every older or bigger kid in the neighborhood when I was growing up. So, as was everybody. And that was just normal growing up in the 60s and 70s. When you popped off, somebody slapped you, you know, and so that was normal. And, you know, when it comes to kids, learn to not quit. You don't quit. Just because somebody tells you you can't do something, you don't quit trying. And just because something's hard, you don't stop. And I think a lot of that originates with the environment that we'll create as parents for our kids, where there's the freedom. I've designed this situation for you to fail and learn and then try again and then try again. So the kids can learn with the right encouragement and motivation and fun and all that kind of stuff that, yeah, sometimes, you know, when I'm learning to shoot foul shots and we're playing horse and I'm, you know, my daughter's shooting the foul shots and I'm standing right behind her and I'm, you know, kind of blowing on her neck or pulling on her hair when she's trying to shoot a foul. I'm trying to distract her and create a situation that could be very frustrating and an excuse for her if she failed, you know? So from a kid's standpoint, recognize that there are incredibly valuable skills that will open doors of opportunity for you down the road if you're willing to push through and learn the lesson. And that delayed gratification idea is something that I don't see a lot of in this generation.
So let me branch off that one second. What do you think about, tell me about the difference in mentality of the successful kid. And I'm going to put your two daughters in the mix here. What is the mentality difference in someone who achieves as your daughters did and someone who has a less chance of achieving? Give me a breakdown of the mentality difference, if you will.
Well, you know, I've said personal responsibility a couple times, and here's an example of what I'm talking about. My daughter was like in the, sixth or seventh grade. She had a teacher she didn't like. She came home and was telling us this sob story about how much this teacher didn't like her. And so my wife and I just kind of looked at her and said, hey, look, both your mom and I, we finished the seventh grade and we got an A. We were pretty good at it. And this is your education. So who's in seventh grade right now? And Allison said, yeah, I am. I said, right. And so what you're going to do is you're going to go talk to that teacher and you're going to convince her that you're the most interested student on the planet. Now, are you the most interested student on the planet? No, you're probably not. But it's your job to own your education. This is your education. You need to get it, and there are no excuses. When you begin to approach, you know, your educational training, your first, second, third job, as this is my training opportunity where I'm going to get in here and learn and make my mistakes, and I'm not going to take everything personally, right? And I'm going to accept personal responsibility for what's in my bank account, for my physical well-being, my health, for my spiritual life, then that's where you end up with kids that I think understand what's required for them to be successful down the road.
Okay, I'm having a hard time taking all this in because everything you said is such good advice. Getting back to what you just said, I think we were both raised in an environment where things were different. We recognize that. And I think a lot of parents today recognize that things are vastly different today. Do you think the deck is stacked against kids and to some extent against parents because everything has changed at the school level, at the sports level? Everything you've been talking about is so true. It's so important to do what you're talking about. But do you think the deck is somewhat stacked against parents and kids today because society has changed, or am I misreading that?
No, I really don't. I think that you can find excuses wherever you want to find them. Examples. Our daughter would come home and the daughters, our daughter's friends would call, the parents would call up my wife and say, can you believe how much homework our kid has? How long does it take your kid to do their homework? And Jenny would say, oh, hour and 15 minutes, you know, and like, oh my goodness, we spent 4 hours last night doing homework. And Jenny's like, what were you doing for 4 hours? Well, you know, what we decided in our home was when Kristen comes home, she's going to get her books, get a glass of iced tea, whatever, go to her room by herself, knock it out, hour and 15 minutes, you know, she should be done. And if she wasn't, I just go and say, shut your books, put it in the book bag, you know, let's go out and play, right? Because if you focus for some reasonable fixed period of time, you should be able to knock out your stuff and then go be a normal kid, right? So I think that you don't have to buy into the line that the rest of the world is kind of saying to you. Another example. I'm kind of a numbers guy, and so, you know, we had the kids counting by twos, threes, fours, fives ever since they were a little tiny, just for fun. But as a result, they naturally learned their multiplication tables. So math was always easy. Well, if math's easy for you all the way up until, you know, algebra one, then algebra one's gonna make sense to you, as will algebra two, you know, on into pre-calculus, calculus, and on up in there, right? And it all starts from just counting, right? So I think that you, even though it's a lot of the messages we hear about how hard it is, the reality is you just have to be willing to do things differently, and maybe the way they used to be done a little more often, and not buy into a lot of the words and ideas that you hear today.
Okay, that's good. So we're going to round the corner towards the end of the show, but here's what I want to do. I want to give you an opportunity because your wisdom is sound. I want you, let's call this a freestyle session. I want you to kind of give us some freestyle advice to parents. Let's talk about parents for their kids as far as raising kids. There are probably some parents out there who are just getting started and they are looking for somebody to give them some good sound advice, and even for the parents of teenagers who maybe feel like they've lost control. Give us some advice for parents, just kind of freestyle advice on what they can do to either make sure that things turn out the best they can for their kids, or if they're older kids in high school, perhaps, or middle school, what they can do to maybe turn the train around, if you will, or turn the ship around if they feel like they're moving in the wrong direction.
Well, I think it all starts with us each individually. I think that mom and dad are always where it always starts. If the focus and the center of the home is not with mom and dad, where, you know, the dad looks out for and takes care of mom, and that is number one. And the mom looks out for, respects, and honors dad, and that is her number one. Not the kids, the dad, right? If that's solid, right? What little kid doesn't like to look up, even though you act like a grossed out, doesn't like to look up and see their mom and dad, you know, hug each other and you know, say goodbye when they're taking off for work in the morning. Every kid likes to see their mom and dad, you know, show that kind of care and affection for each other. So if mom and dad can start with looking out for each other, number one, make that part solid, then the rest of the behaviors will flow downhill. Mom and dad drive the home, not the kids. If the kid bursts into your room, you know, at 8 o'clock in the evening and tells you that they have some massive assignment that they've got to, you know, have all these construction paper for, and if we don't go to the store right now and get all this stuff and help me do this thing, then I'm going to fail, then let them fail. And maybe that's the lesson that they need to learn, so that in the future they learn to plan ahead and you know, do what they need to do to make sure that they're not behind and bursting into the room at the end of the night. So that would be my advice, is keep the main thing. Moms and dads take care of each other, and then the two of you look out and build an environment that is fun, that is filled with opportunity, where you're always looking to find ways to help the kids learn lessons so that they have an increased chance of success down the road.
Where were you 20 years ago? Well, that's great. So how about the kids? Give some advice to the kids out there who are listening.
Yeah, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. You're a kid. And listen to your mom and dad. Learn the lessons from those around you. Learn what it means to work hard and pay the price. Put in the time. Put in the work. I mean, there's there's lots of, you know, fun things in social media about you know, highly skilled professional athletes, highly skilled musicians, and they give you a little insight into, you know, you see us on Sunday or you see me at the concert, but this is the time and commitment and effort that's required in order to achieve this kind of excellence. And that should be an honored endeavor and not just, you know, something that you just pay some money to go see. I mean, the verse from scripture is, be someone who is really, really good at something and you'll serve in the king's palace. You know, so I think that's the message to kids is you don't have to do like everybody else ever, but find something that you enjoy doing. Develop the skill of being really good at it, and then learn from those around you. And don't give up. You know, don't be someone who just gets frustrated and quits because it's not easy.
That's fantastic advice. So I got to ask you this because it is all over the place. Social media, how is it affecting the kids today? And what advice can you give maybe parents and kids as it relates to social media? I know Instagram, Snapchat, all that stuff is out there, and it seems like it has, for some people, kind of taken over their lives. Any thoughts on that?
A lot of folks will talk it down. I don't buy into that necessarily. I think it's a tool that's out there. We like to go to a restaurant when we're down at the beach, and Jeannie and I like to start our day at the Eggs Up Grill. And now that we're, you know, I'm 55, she's 55, we're basically old people, but we don't think of ourselves that way. But when we go to the Eggs Up Grill at, you know, 11 o'clock for a late breakfast, early lunch, we look around and we're with a bunch of old people. And there are several tables where the husband and the wife are there with the newspapers wide open, up in front of their faces, you know, reading what I'm sure is a great article, but they're not talking to each other, you know. So the excuse that social media is the problem, I don't think has as much validity as we sometimes give it. So it's fun for a specific reason, but if it becomes what you're totally focused on and you have to have likes or whatever the things are when somebody tells you that they liked what you said or did, that in order to enjoy your day, that's probably not a healthy thing. But that tendency has been around for a long time. That's just not a social media thing.
Well, maybe you've hit on something important, because maybe you just suggested that the kids who are doing this are filling gaps in that maybe should have been filled in by their parents at certain points in their life. But that's, I guess, another story altogether. So, John, everything you've said has been fantastic. I know that your girls have impressed me tremendously. And I don't know if you and Jeannie had some magic wand that you waved growing up. But, I've seen the fruits of your labor. I know you both, and I know how well you've done as parents. And I told you that time that we talked that I had to get you on the podcast, because we've got to be able to listen to some of this wisdom, because there's something to it. And, you know, I knew John's parents, and John's mom is still around. His father is not. His father was very strict, very smart man, a PhD. So I knew John grew up in a strict academic environment, and his girls certainly proved themselves to have gained that knowledge and wisdom that both his mom and dad had. You've done well, and I just want to thank you for taking the time out. I know you're busy, you're traveling between Atlanta and Baton Rouge and South Carolina, and you're always on the road. But thank you for your time today, and any parting words?
My pleasure. Hopefully these words and these podcasts can just be an encouragement in some way for parents to just let go of the weight of the pressure of guilt for being afraid of making a mistake. We all make mistakes. Focus on pouring into your child, creating an environment where they can learn, where they can struggle, where they can experience success, and then, you know, don't make excuses for the times when we make mistakes. Just learn from it and move on. So hopefully there's a huge amount of encouragement that people will get from listening to these kinds of things.
Well, there you have it. John Kay. Now you see why it is I wanted him to be on the show. So we've had a brilliant person on the show. I guess next week, unless I can find somebody else, you've got to have me again. But John, thanks very much for being here. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you'll join us next week. Until next week, all the best to you and all the best in your endeavors to raise fantastic kids and to be the best parents that you can be. Until next week.